Hi, I'm Catherine with Free Tours by Foot, here to guide you on a tour of the High Line. Our tour starts at the southern entrance to the High Line at Ganzevoort Street. The closest subways are the A, C, E, and L trains at 14th Street and 8th Avenue. When you arrive at Ganzevoort Street, you should see a set of stairs leading up to the High Line. On your way here from the subway, you passed through some of the meatpacking district. Today, this is one of the trendiest neighborhoods in the city. It's known for its upscale shopping and its nightlife. The name comes from the area's much humbler origins, though. It was once home to about 250 meatpacking businesses and slaughterhouses. Other business in the area included cigar makers and auto repair shops. So even though many of these buildings today house upscale shops and restaurants, they have a decided industrial quality to them. The area began to decline in the 1960s, especially with the creation of supermarkets, which changed the way meat and other groceries were distributed. Even though the meatpacking business stayed the major industry in the neighborhood through the 1970s, the area also became home to drug dealing and prostitution. BDSM clubs also flourished in the area through the 1980s. By the 1990s, though, the area started undergoing a major transformation. Stella McCartney, Alexander McQueen, and Diane von Furstenberg opened boutiques in the area, high-end restaurants opened up, and the character Samantha on Sex and the City moved in. The neighborhood had definitely arrived. Today, the meatpacking businesses have almost all vanished, but there are still a few left. You'll be able to see a couple of them once you're up on the High Line, so go ahead and walk up the stairs. When you get to the top, press play. Before we start heading up the High Line, a few things about the structure that you're standing on. The High Line was originally constructed as a part of something called the West Side Improvement Project, which was approved in 1929. Prior to that, as early as 1847, railroads ran down the west side of Manhattan at street level. The construction of the elevated rail tracks, which was completed in 1934, was a huge relief from both a safety and a traffic standpoint. The original tracks ran from 34th Street down to St. John's Park Terminal at Spring Street. The rail tracks in many places were connected directly to factories and warehouses on New York's industrial west side. The rise of interstate trucking in the 1950s made rail shipping less popular, and the use of the High Line started to diminish. By 1960, the southernmost part of the line from Ganzevoort down to Spring Street was demolished, almost half of the original structure. The last train ran on the High Line in 1980. Groups began to lobby for the demolition of the High Line, and it was disconnected from the national rail system because it was assumed that it would be torn down. Over the years of disuse, grasses and shrubs began to grow along the tracks. The landscaping that's on the High Line today is meant to evoke that natural growth that occurred. In 1999, a nonprofit group called Friends of the High Line was created to advocate transforming the High Line into a public park, similar to the Promenade Plantée in Paris. Fashion designer Diane von Furstenberg was a major backer of the project. The first section of the High Line Park opened in 2009, with the following sections opening in 2011 and 2014. The High Line has become one of the most popular tourist destinations in the city, and it sparked a complete redevelopment of the area around it. Let's go explore the High Line. The building that you see in front of you is the new home of the Whitney Museum of American Art, which was designed by architect Renzo Piano and opened up on May 1, 2015. The building includes approximately 50,000 square feet of exhibition space inside and another 13,000 square feet of exhibition space outside. The lobby gallery is open to visitors free of charge, and the permanent collections are housed on higher floors. The style of the building is meant to celebrate its location and work with the industrial buildings that surround it, and of course, the High Line itself. The Whitney Museum was founded by Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney as a part of her advocacy for living American artists. In the early 20th century, American artists had a very difficult time selling their work or even getting someone to display it. Mrs. Whitney, a fellow artist, seeing their struggle, began purchasing and showing their work. In 1914, she established the Whitney Studio in Greenwich Village to show the work of artists disregarded by the art establishment. By 1929, she had a collection of over 500 works. She offered them as an endowment to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Their refusal led to the creation of the Whitney Museum of American Art in 1930. The museum was to focus exclusively on the artists of America. The museum began on West 8th Street, but it's also been located on West 54th and on East 75th before it moved to its new home. The museum is open from 10:30 a.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. on Mondays and also Wednesdays through Sundays. The museum is closed on Tuesdays. If you look over the railing on the museum side of the High Line, you can look down and see the few remaining meatpacking businesses still in the neighborhood. Now turn to your right, away from the museum, and you should see a building ahead of you straddling the High Line. This direction is north. We'll be heading north up the High Line for the remainder of the tour. Turn your attention back to that building in front of you that's straddling the High Line. This is the Standard Hotel. The Standard Hotel was built in 2009 and was declared the Municipal Art Society's best new building for that year. The window design lends itself heavily to exhibitionists and voyeurs alike. In fact, the building stirred up a bit of controversy because it seemed that the hotel was encouraging both. An ad campaign ran encouraging guests to stay at the not-yet-finished hotel. And the tagline read, "We'll put up with your banging if you'll put up with ours." Today, the hotel boasts over 300 rooms and one of the most popular rooftop bars in the city. Now you're going to walk north up the High Line. You're going to pass underneath the Standard Hotel and underneath the next building that you come to. When you come out on the other side, press play. Look over the railings on the left side of the High Line, out at the Hudson River. You should see the shell of the Pier 54 gateway. Try to picture the way the Hudson would have looked with all the massive passenger liners docking here. Pier 54 belonged to the Cunard Line. This is where the RMS Lusitania disembarked before being sunk by a German U-boat, the event that led to the United States entering World War I. This pier was also the drop-off for the survivors of the Titanic in 1912. The RMS Carpathia brought them here after dropping the lifeboats up at Pier 59. Continue to head north and stop just before you get to the next building. Then press play. The building that you see here, along with about 20 other buildings on 14th and 15th Streets, was built for the National Biscuit Company, or Nabisco. The trains brought flour, sugar, butter, and shortenings to these buildings to make favorite treats like Fig Newtons, Barnum's Animal Crackers, and Nilla Wafers. Legend has it that the Oreo was invented right here, so you are walking on hallowed cookie ground. Today, this building houses the Chelsea Market and television facilities for Oxygen and the Food Network. Other tenants of the complex are Major League Baseball and Google. Head underneath the building. When you come to a curved piece of track on your left, press play. The piece of track on your left is known as the Southern Spur. The spurs of the High Line are curved pieces that veer off the main track. This one allowed trains to go right into the Nabisco warehouse. If you look closely, you can even see NBC written above the spur. That stands for National Biscuit Company. If you walk further under the covered area and look to your left, you should see panes of colored glass. This is an art installation called The River That Flows Both Ways, which was the Native Americans' name for the Hudson River. Artist Spencer Finch created this by snapping one photo per minute of the Hudson River for 700 minutes. The colors of the panes are taken from a single pixel point in each of the 700 photos, so you're not just looking at panes of glass, but all the colors of the river. There are art installations all up and down the High Line, so make sure you're keeping an eye out. Head out from under the building, and when you get to the next curve, or spur, press play. This spur is known as the Northern Spur. The landscape on the Northern Spur is meant to be reminiscent of the growth that was occurring on the elevated tracks of the High Line before the park was created. This spur led directly into the Merchants Refrigerating Company warehouse, the large brick building that you see off to your left. It opened up in 1918. In that time period, businesses didn't have their own refrigerators and freezers. They had to rent out space in buildings like the one that you see. Keep walking north up the High Line until you get to an overlook onto the avenue. Take a seat there, and then press play. No matter what terrible traffic snarls you see below, You have to know that it used to be infinitely worse. The avenue below is 10th Avenue, though it was known for a time as Death Avenue. Before the High Line was constructed, trains came down 10th Avenue at street level, alongside all of the carts and carriages and pedestrians. Because of the accidents and even fatalities that occurred, the avenue became known as Death Avenue. In December of 1850, the city decided that something needed to be done. This led to the creation of some of the most interesting figures in New York City's history, the West Side Cowboys. Their job was to ride out in front of the trains waving red flags, or red lanterns, at night, warning pedestrians out of the way. Rather than hiring locals, the city preferred country riders, who were a little more used to being on horseback and wouldn't get rattled in the stressful environment. For decades, the West Side Cowboys could be seen, in chaps and cowboy hats, herding train cars. When the West Side Improvement Project was introduced in 1929, the future of the cowboys in New York was threatened. The completion of the High Line in 1934 made them more unnecessary, as many trains were being taken above street level. The final ride was by West Side cowboy George Hade and his horse Cyclone in 1941, leading a train of 14 freight cars filled with oranges. When you leave the overlook, you should see a little grove of maple trees off to the side. This is called 10th Avenue Square. If you go over there and look south over the railing, you'll have a nice view of the Statue of Liberty in the distance. Then, turn north and start heading up the High Line until you get to West 17th Street. Look towards the river and press play. The massive blue and gray complex that you see to your left is called Chelsea Piers. Inside, there's a golf club, a bowling alley, a skating rink, indoor rock climbing, and much more. For any Law & Order fans, this is also where the production studios for that franchise are located. But this complex is actually a repurposing of what was originally there. Large piers for the luxury liners that used to dock here. One of the piers you're looking at is Pier 59. In 1912, this pier was owned by the White Star Line and was eagerly anticipating the arrival of the Titanic. When the ship went down, the RMS Carpathia picked up the survivors and brought them to Pier 54, but their first stop was here at 59 to drop off the lifeboats. The building that you can see next to it that looks eerily like an iceberg is the IAC building, designed by Frank Gehry in 2007. IAC owns Newsweek and Match.com. Over the years, large ocean liners started moving to piers further uptown, but Chelsea Piers was the point of departure for the U.S. Olympic team, including Jesse Owens, as they made their way to the 1936 Summer Games in Berlin. During World War II, the piers were used to deploy troops. Construction on the current complex started in 1994. Now you're going to keep heading north till you get to 18th Street, then press play. If you look to your left, you should see a low-lying building. That's the site of the former Roxy Nightclub, which opened as a roller disco in 1978. During this time, it was referred to as the Studio 54 of roller rinks. As skating started to become a little less popular, the Roxy rebranded itself as a dance club. In the 1980s, the club became known as a hip-hop venue. They also hosted MC battles and breakdancing and double dutch competitions. As the city changed over the years, the Roxy evolved as well. In the 1990s, they were known for hosting the biggest weekly gay dance party in the city. Many famous artists have graced the Roxy over the years, including Cher, Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, Bette Midler, and Beyoncé. The club finally closed its doors on March 10, 2007. A documentary called Roxy, The Last Dance, was created about the club's final party. Plans were in place to demolish the building for new residential development, but in 2008, rumors surfaced that the Roxy would reopen. The local community board has said that the club can reopen if it served the community in the long term, so we'll see. Now you're going to continue north to 19th Street. The area you're going through is called the Chelsea Grassland. Take your camera out for the walk. There's a really precise spot where you can line up one of the neo-Gothic towers of the seminary with the Empire State Building. It's a great photo op. When you get to 19th Street, look to your left and press play. The first building on the southwest side of the street is The Kitchen, a non-profit art and performance space. The strange-sounding name references the organization's original location, the kitchen of the Mercer Arts Center. In 1971, video artists began showing their work there, and The Kitchen began to expand and include artists of many kinds, but the focus was on emerging artists whose work was of an experimental nature. Some alumni have included Brian Eno and Philip Glass, and the Beastie Boys also gave an early performance at The Kitchen. They moved to their current location in 1986. This was seen as a dramatic and kind of weird choice because the area was predominantly auto repair shops. When the New York Times covered the move uptown, they said, "This neighborhood will be the next Soho." Soho had been home to New York's art galleries for many years, and the New York Times ended up really hitting the nail on the head with that one because many of the galleries would move to Chelsea in the coming years. Now keep walking north to 20th Street. Look to your right at the red brick complex and press play. The neighborhood that you see around you all used to be a part of a large private estate, originally owned by Major Thomas Clark, a British veteran of the French and Indian War. He named his estate Chelsea, after a veterans' hospital in London. His estate was passed down through his family and ended up with his grandson, Clement Clark Moore. When New York City announced the commissioner's plan to expand in 1811, Moore was extremely opposed. That was understandable, since 9th Avenue was set to cut right through his property. He eventually realized that he couldn't fight the growth of New York, and he was in possession of some pretty desirable real estate. He sold his land off in lots to New Yorkers with a lot of money. He reserved his apple orchard, though, and he donated that to the Episcopal diocese for a seminary. The neo-Gothic structure that you're looking at right now was built in 1927, and it takes up most of 20th and 21st Streets between 9th and 10th Avenues. Clement Clark Moore's other legacy is far better known. He composed a poem called A Visit from St. Nicholas for his family. It's more commonly called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and it's responsible for many of our modern conceptions of Santa Claus. Now go to the left side of the High Line to look at 20th Street to the west, then press play. If you look out to your left, you should see some warehouses on the north side of the street. During the 1940s, these held several tons of uranium. It was being stored there as a part of the Manhattan Project, the research and development of the world's first atomic bomb during World War II. This was done because of news that German scientists had learned how to split a uranium atom. Fears arose that Nazi scientists would use that energy to create devastating weapons. Albert Einstein himself wrote a letter to President Roosevelt urging him to create an atomic research program. The Manhattan Project began to be used as a code name. Columbia University was one of the first facilities used for research, and the Army branch of the project was temporarily headquartered at 270 Broadway. Now you're going to continue north to 21st Street. When you come to a church pressed right up against the High Line, stop and press play. When you look at Church of the Guardian Angels on your right, it looks like it was the unfortunate victim of the building of the High Line and accidentally got squished up against the train tracks. This church was, believe it or not, placed purposefully. Their original location was further uptown, and it was directly in the path of the new elevated tracks, so they were forced to demolish their building and move. For their new location, they chose a spot directly against the tracks that made them move in the first place. This church was built in 1930, and when the High Line was in operation, Sunday worshippers could often hear and feel the trains just rattling past. If you look at the stained glass windows on the backside of the church, you can see that they are literally a couple of meters from where the trains would have been running. Now you're going to continue north, through an area that feels a little bit like a tunnel. When the High Line opens out again, you're going to see some wooden bleachers up ahead of you. Look out onto West 22nd Street and press play. Take a look out to your left at 22nd Street. On the north side of the street is the Chelsea home of the renowned Dia Foundation. The DIA Foundation was originally founded in 1974 as the Lone Star Foundation by a group of art patrons in Houston. The intent of the DIA was to support projects whose nature or scale would preclude other funding sources. The name DIA is taken from the Greek word for through. It's meant to suggest that the foundation would enable projects that otherwise wouldn't come to fruition. The DIA Foundation first came to Chelsea in 1987 in a converted warehouse. They would typically offer one artist an entire floor to develop a new project or to show their existing work. The artist generally got 1 year in the space. Originally, DIA Chelsea got about 16,000 visitors a year, but by 2004, numbers had grown to about 60,000 visitors a year. They closed the warehouse in 2004 for what was supposed to be a renovation, but the repairs needed ended up being more extensive than they had anticipated, so they sold the building in 2007 for $38.5 million. Ideas for a new space were proposed, and they actually considered taking the spot at the base of the High Line, where the Whitney is today. But they eventually decided on the 22nd Street building. It's actually three buildings that they have woven together with interconnected galleries. The new facility has over 15,000 square feet of exhibition space. When the DIA moved to Chelsea, they were really trendsetters. Most of New York's galleries ended up moving from Soho to Chelsea. And today, from 20th to 29th streets in the neighborhood, you can find over 100 art galleries. So if you're an art lover, explore the area. Galleries typically open new shows on Thursday nights, so for a fun and free night out, you can gallery hop to all the openings and you get free wine all along the way. Now you're going to continue north to 23rd Street, just past the elevator, and look out to your right at the absolutely enormous structure across 10th Avenue, and then press play. You're looking at the London Terrace Apartments. When it was built, this was the largest apartment complex in the entire world, with about 1,700 apartments and an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Construction started in 1929, and the project was being headed up by a man named Henry Mandel. He had selected the spot because of its proximity to Midtown Manhattan. His idea was to create modestly priced housing for white-collar workers. He was not prepared, though, for a roadblock in the form of a very tough lady named Tilly Hart. Tilly Hart had been living in a subleased house, and she was absolutely certain that she had the right to be in that house until May of 1930. Now, the underlying lease for the house had actually expired, so Mandel had legal rights to the property, but Tilly Hart absolutely refused to move. The construction had started, and all of the houses around hers had been demolished, but Tilly still held out. She barricaded herself inside, and when people would approach the house, she would throw stones and bricks at them. In October of 1929, the police entered her house, and they moved everything she owned out onto the sidewalk. That night, she slept inside on the bare floor. The next day, though, she gave in and moved out. When her house was demolished, it ended up being where the cornerstone for the London Terrace Apartments was laid. I think later on Tilly Hart maybe got her moment of vindication, though, because Henry Mandel, the man who had torn down her house and evicted her, ended up being ruined by his building project. The building cost $25 million to build, and it went into default by 1933, just a few years after it was finished. Mandel himself had to declare personal bankruptcy with debts of $14 million. Today, that would be about $220 million. Now you're going to continue north to 25th Street and look directly to the right of the High Line. Then press play. The building to your right on the north side of West 25th Street was built for the R.C. Williams Wholesale Grocery Company. R.C. Williams started off small as a family-run store down in Lower Manhattan in 1809. Their original location was on Maiden Lane. They seem to have done really well for themselves because by the time this building that you see in front of you was constructed in 1927, they were wealthy enough to employ one of the top architects in the country, Cass Gilbert. You may be familiar with some of Gilbert's other better-known work, like the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., or here in New York, the Woolworth Building and the Alexander Hamilton Custom House. If you know his other work, you might be a little bit surprised when you see this building. It doesn't have any of the ornamentation that's on his better-known works. It's very, very plain, but this was done on purpose. Simplicity was the goal. Gilbert once said, "There is something very fine about a great gray mass of building, all one color, all one tone, yet modified by the sunlight or shadow to pearly gray of wonderful delicacy." When you put it that way, it does sound really nice. The building today houses Avenues, an upscale private school. Tuition at Avenues runs close to $50,000 a year. The school made headlines a few years ago when Surrey crews began attending. Now you're going to walk north to West 26th Street, and you're going to look west all the way to the end of the block. Press play. As you look down the block, you should see a large building with rounded corners. This building is called the Sterrett-Lehigh Building, and was originally used as a warehouse and a freight terminal. There were spots for trains to drive right into the ground floor of the building. It was built in 1932 as a joint venture of Sterrett Real Estate Ventures and the Lehigh Valley Railroad. The building is every bit as big as it looks. It has about 26 million cubic feet of space. Aside from its size, the building is noteworthy for being very attractive, particularly for a warehouse. The lines of the building and the nice rounded corners give it a graceful appearance. It was built on the site of the Lehigh Valley Freight Terminal. The building hit hard times shortly after completion due to the Great Depression. Sterrett Real Estate was bought out, but the Lehigh Railroad held out until 1944. The building has changed owners many times since then, but the current tenants include Tommy Hilfiger USA and Martha Stewart Omni Media. Now continue walking north to 29th Street. Look out to the right, and you'll see the U.S. Mail Distribution Center. Then press play. The building that you see one block over is where most of New York's mail is processed. Less now than it used to be, maybe, but it's still a high-traffic facility. The center had a very serious scare back in 2001 when it processed mail for five New York media outlets that had been laced with military-grade anthrax bacteria. This happened just one week after 9/11. New York was already on high alert, and this caused a widespread panic. The Mail Distribution Center is a little rough-looking on the outside these days, but they actually have one of the largest green rooftops in New York City. The building is on the site of the former Hudson Railroad Depot. The West Side train lines originally accommodated both passengers and cargo, but in 1864, Cornelius Vanderbilt bought the Hudson Railroad. As he gained control of all of the rail lines in New York City, he decided that all passenger trains should come down the Harlem Line, where riders would disembark at his new station, Grand Central Depot. Before the switch, however, the Hudson Railroad Depot had many passengers come through, including a newly elected Abraham Lincoln with his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln. It was his first trip to New York as president. Just 4 years later, mourners accompanied Lincoln's body in a procession from City Hall, where he'd lain in state, to the Hudson Railroad Depot. This was the starting point for a cross-country trip to bring Lincoln's body back to Springfield, Illinois, his hometown.
You are now entering the newest section of the High Line, which officially opened in 2014. You will still see a fair amount of construction as the High Line itself has massively changed this area. Continue walking until you come to a split in the path. If you go to the right, you will be able to walk the spur. Unlike the spurs further south on the High Line, this one is open to the public and meant to be walked on. Feel free to pause this and go explore the spur. It offers art installations and beautiful views. When you are ready, you can circle back to the main High Line path. As you are walking, you will come to the entrance to the Hudson Yards development on your right. Stop and press play. The Hudson Yards is the largest private development in New York City since Rockefeller Center was built in the 1930s. The Hudson Yards boasts that it is tomorrow's city today, largely due to the fact that it is a smart city that uses data gathered to monitor and manage everything from air quality and energy savings to waste management. The site that these buildings now occupy has been intended for other projects over the years, most notably for the West Side Stadium, when New York City was making a bid for the 2012 Summer Olympics. What you can see today is considered Phase 1, 8 structures and a public green space. The buildings are a mix of commercial and residential and also includes a mall, a hotel, and a cultural center, which is named The Shed. The Shed is multi-purpose and dedicated to bringing the arts in all mediums to the Hudson Yards. The building itself has an extendable outer shell, so it can double the footprint of the building, if need be. The shops at Hudson Yards include a number of high-end stores as well as Snark Park, a constantly changing exhibition space. Phase 2 will include more office and residential buildings, as well as a school. This is a great area to stroll around and do some shopping or some eating. There are plenty of food options here, including Mercado, a food hall dedicated to Spanish cuisine. One of the most striking features of the Hudson Yards is The Vessel, an interactive art installation designed by Thomas Heatherwick. It features over 1 mile of interlocking staircases with 2,500 steps. The structure rises 16 stories into the sky, and there are 80 different stair landings to rest on. The idea is for people to climb and explore and take in as many unique views as possible. Because of the nature of the structure, you do need a ticket to climb, but they are available at kiosks in the 20 Hudson Yards building. The Vessel is actually not a permanent name. Owners have asked the public to name it, and there is a website devoted to the naming. We will provide directions back to the Hudson Yards at the end of the tour if you would like to come explore this area. For now, let's continue along the High Line. Continue walking along the High Line. You will be following it as it starts its last broad curve. You will come to the Pershing Square Beams, an interactive play installation for children, as well as numerous rotating art installations. Follow the path as it curves until you are able to see the Hudson Yards straight on. Then stop and press play. From here, you can see the West Side Yard, a train yard that gives this area its name. You can look down from the High Line and see trains sitting on the tracks. A part of the Hudson Yards development is actually built right out over the top of the train yards. This area's importance to the New York City railroads began a long time ago, when trains were not allowed south of 32nd Street, and the Hudson River Railroad Depot was in this area. Later, as the railroads grew, New York Central and Penn Central Railroads used this area as a freight terminal. The property was put up for sale when Penn Central declared bankruptcy in the 1970s, and it was purchased by the state of New York. The northern part of the property became the Javits Convention Center, which you can see if you look to your left from here, and the rest became the West Side Yards. The West Side Yards greatly improved railroad capacity for commuters. Previously, trains that had brought passengers in from Long Island had to turn around and go back to Long Island empty of passengers to be stored throughout the day. The West Side Yards immediately increased capacity for the railroad out of Penn Station when it was completed in 1987. The eastern part of the railroad was rezoned for commercial and residential, and the air rights above it were acquired in order to build the Hudson Yards development. Now continue walking as the High Line curves around to the end. When you exit, you will be at 34th Street, west of 11th Avenue. To get to the subway or back to the Hudson Yards, you will walk east down 34th. Be aware that the block right off the High Line is a megabus pickup point, so it can be extremely crowded right as you get off the High Line. You will come to the number 7 train after you cross over 11th Avenue. This is the closest entrance. From here, you can also explore the Hudson Yards before you go. That's the end of our tour. Thank you for joining me. I hope you'll consider checking out one of our other audio tours or signing up for one of our Pay What You Wish group walking tours. Check out www.freetoursbyfoot.com for more details. See you next time.